found this in Ganarum. Ganarmir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sickaholics.
Guys, this is your host David Duncan, and with me today is a full house. We've got
Aaron O'Brien
and
Guy Davis,
and we also have our special guest for today, Chris Yoli from Ominous Press. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Ominous guest.
True. He's like hanging around in a black shadow.
He's actually standing outside looking at it through the window.
And it actually is a dark and stormy night.
It all works out.
You know, if the podcast ends right here, you probably won't hear it.
Parfait of murder.
Screams.
We're dying!
So, Chris is the marketing and business development for Ominous Press and also for Sleeping Giant Collectibles. And on top of all that, he is the co-founder and festival director for Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival and is a Star Trek fan. So he came just to talk Star Trek and to talk about Ominous Press and everything else that he's involved. So he's a busy guy. Very busy.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have him aboard for this. This is great. Thanks for coming along.
Oh, not a problem at all.
So just to educate our listeners, Ominous Press was started up back in the 90s, mm-hmm. and it basically started by a gentleman named Bart Sears, and he did a he's an amazing artist, and he's done a whole bunch of work, and Ominous went away, and now it's kind of restarted again, and they're back to telling the original tales and some new ideas from that he's come up with. Why don't you elaborate a little more just so you can get everyone kind of the idea what's behind Ominous.
So not that long ago, my boss, his name is Sean Husvar. He's actually the publisher for Ominous. He's been friends with Bart, Ron Mars, Andy Smith, and Tom Rainey for a long time, and they got together at a convention and decided to kind of relaunch Ominous. So it's actually going to be three new books that are coming out. Currently, what we've been producing is finishing off the original run of material, and that's called Ominous Legendary. We're currently heading into the third issue. By the fourth issue, it's going to be all brand new content. And then we're going to launch the three new comic books. Demigod is one, Prometheus, and Giant Killer. Mm-hmm. So, and it's pretty exciting. I mean, it's that this is a local company's kind of...
Yeah, and the Buffalo area.
The art is fantastic. It's getting better because I get to kind of see it in advance. So
right. The art is very cool. A lot of big muscle bound heroes, Giant Killer especially, and actually they're both Prometheus and Demigod is still, you know, I mean they're all like these big muscle.
Yes.
Yeah. Heroes, and I like the idea of the Giant Killer because I read the promotion comic that you gave me for that, and it's sort of like this warrior who's got this little, I don't know if she's girl, little girl, but young girl, and they're kind of like jumping around different dimensions, and
there's if I put it in a nutshell, there's seven worlds.
Yeah.
And he transports randomly to different worlds.
Right.
And he has to be in, she is essentially the light. She is the, he's trying to protect her. She's the heroine of the series, that crosses all three. And, he teleports randomly and he has to be within physical contact with her at all time. If he's not and he teleports, he just goes somewhere and she disappears to another world as well.
Okay.
And that's sort of what we do a sample of in the premiere.
Yeah. Like, they touch hands at the very end of it. And the art's beautiful, and we'll have links to all this.
Sure,
yeah. In our show notes that you can check this stuff out
and look at it.
Yeah, and so people know too, like Bart Sears, he's done work for DC Comics, and he's done a whole bunch of other work for Eclipso and for Valiant, and then one of the writers, Ron Mars, he's written for Green Lantern, Silver Surfer, and Witchblade. So they're, you know, I mean, they're veteran artists, writers. So, and they're not just like people starting out and just trying to get a name. They're already established. and they're taking their own ideas they've probably been, you know, coming up with the last couple of years and like really opening the full salvos and having some fun with it now. So
Bart worked on one of my favorite Valiant titles, which was Exo Manowar.
I remember Exo. Yeah. That was, especially the 90s. That's what I remember it. It's still around actually. It is. Yeah. I haven't read it recently, but I remember back in the 90s and it was fun. It was, you know, a space romp of, you know,
living armor.
Yeah.
So. And a Viking, basically.
It's what like, more could you want?
What more could you want, right?
For Ominous, I know you've been hitting all the cons. Actually, you were at the last Buffalo Nickel City Con. I didn't even know you were there because I hadn't a chance to walk around that much. So I'm sorry I missed you.
That's okay.
But so have you been? You've been going on and doing all the cons and checking things out?
Our overall goal is to really kind of have a presence at every convention that we can. So actually this past weekend, the whole Ominous team, they were in Baltimore for that convention.
That's
and
awesome.
I went to Fan Expo Canada,
which was
crazy.
Yeah. I was there on Sunday.
Saturday. I did the day and it was, you know, a lot of sweaty people in hallways.
Thumbs up all conventions. Yeah.
So many escalators.
Oh my God. Like it's the weirdest.
Yeah. It's a weird, hall. It's a weird place.
It's two buildings. It's like 8 stories between the two buildings.
Was it originally made for like farm animals or something?
I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me. It's just a weird place.
It's not a normal open floor convention.
Most of it's underground.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And now, Buffalo Comic Con is coming up in about another week.
From today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going to have the entire Ominous team there.
That's awesome. So, yeah, it's going to be great to have everyone there together. And do you have, besides the Buffalo Comic Con, do you have any other cons lined up?
We're taking one. Yes, we do. We have an entire trade show list. I just couldn't tell you which.
Oh, okay. If any of our listeners are out there, I was just wondering. But just check their websites, you lazy bastards. So not only are we talking about Ominous Press, which is amazing just to look at the art because the art's beautiful, we are also talking about the Next Generation episode, Conspiracy, which happened in season one. And
it's way more solid for a season one episode.
Yeah, better season one than most. And this came out in 1988. I was 14 years old. Very young.
We were 14.
We were 14. Yeah, we were 14.
I was like 9. How old were you, Guy?
I would have been 15.
Wow.
So,
I'm
Guy, you're so old.
I'm the youngin'.
I'm the oldest one in the group.
I'm the chitrid.
Do you need to take a break for some fiber?
No, I just need my walker. We're good. If you just hand me my walker, I'll be fine.
I need a break for fiber. What are you talking about?
I need my juice box and my fold out mat. Since I'm the child of the group.
So Conspiracy is one of those episodes that came out, especially at the time. I think we talked about this once before when we talked about Wrath of Khan, was the whole worm thing coming in and out of the ear was probably one of the more shocking things in Star Trek to really be out there.
We're trying a new orifice.
Yeah, and now this is a completely different orifice, and this is a totally
It's not the butthole. No. It's okay.
That's for later.
In Star Trek Discovery, that's a word to discover.
The creatures go up in the butthole.
The butthole worms. They have to take their pants off to see the tail sticking out.
The blue kills.
They just decide not to do the exams and blow up the ship.
I thought those were Klingons. I'm sorry.
You know, those prostate exams or how they discover them. This was one of those episodes when I saw it was, I don't want to say shocking, but it was definitely like, whoa, this is not your average Star Trek episode. It was very graphic and
especially not for season one.
Season one,
I will sit and watch, and it's almost I feel embarrassed. You know, there's moments you watch it and you're just embarrassed.
Oh, I know. Like, yes. And season one and two are very hard to get through. I mean, two gets a little better, but season one is like watching paint dry sometimes.
It's like, hey, let's redo the naked now.
Yeah.
Why are we going to do that?
So, unlike the last episode where I talked about like people being murdered, there wasn't anything really that special happening in this episode other than the just a wild special effects.
And I forgot to put the flaming car on the cover.
Oh, man.
I was trying to be sensitive, guys. Don't hold it against me.
You and your sensitivity. So the effects were created by Michael Westmore. And they won an Emmy Award for makeup for the series, Best Outstanding Achievement in Makeup. So
I think the best makeup part is like when he's sitting in the chair at the end.
Don't give away the ending.
His neck blows up like a balloon.
Don't give away the ending. This
will coexist.
What happened to this neck?
This episode is almost 30 years old. Don't give it away. Don't give spoilers. It away.
There might be a Star Trek fan that hasn't seen it. Now I've ruined it for them.
Guy, when you saw this originally, you were a year older than me. How did you feel when you saw this?
You know, it really freaked me out. And I remember my mom, who was at the time a producer and a talent agent, she was saying, they're getting away with a lot because there's a writer's strike going on. And I guess the censors were on strike or something.
Censors were on strike?
That's yeah, because awesome. Because that was extraordinarily graphic. And I mean, especially for TV in the 1980s. I mean, now, of course, it's nothing.
Yeah.
But in 1980s.
You had the Bob Newhart show and then you had this. I mean.
Right, exactly.
No, there's no comparison. So
I guess the censors were on strike or something.
It peels away on his skull. You see his eyeball sitting in the skull skeleton and it explodes.
Yeah.
I was like, you could have put a new lady in there after, you know, not having the censors.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was pretty taken aback, and my mom was pretty taken aback too. She's like, "Wow, that's pretty gutsy for TV." You know,
it's like, amazing that your mom would be that progressive about it, and not just like, "Okay, we're never watching that again."
She was in the industry, so
nothing faced her.
She had to be progressive about it.
You have to be progressive if you're in the industry,
right? And Chris, I know that you know you're big into film, and obviously you like horror films as well. I mean, were you well versed in horror films by this point?
You know, back then when I was 14, I'd say it was a lot of like B movies, like trauma movies, things like that. So that didn't really. I was stunned at that they did that for a Star Trek episode,
right?
Given how the first season kind of was,
delicate,
and I think a lot of that had to do with like Roddenberry felt like that he was in charge of this, this special
dynasty.
Yes, that he had to present a certain way.
Right. No, he definitely. And in fact, one of the things that it said, and what I think Memory Alpha said, there was supposed to actually the original idea was supposed to be a coup in the Federation, and he said, "No way, this is never that would never be that would never happen." So,
just like Section 31 never happened.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But then again,
I don't think he would have approved of Section 31.
No, I'm sure he wouldn't. I'm sure he would have completely rejected Section 31.
I have always viewed this episode. It was a shame they never did anything with it because
it is one of those episodes, like, and they even leave it to think
leave it to open like something was going to happen.
Like they have the just zooming into that nebula as the Enterprise goes off. It doesn't follow the Enterprise.
The
it just
beacon beeping at the end.
And it's really a shame because I mean that was a story that could have easily evolved with like as the budget evolved and the special effects evolved, and they could have. I would have even done that personally. Deep Space Nine, when the Federation was just really awful, and a lot of people disagree with me on that. But you know, Dominion said, "Hey, just stay away." No, we're just gonna go in there and shoot phasers.
Maybe they were Dominion and, parasite.
Well, I mean, my thought was you could do a lot with that.
Yeah,
you could. That could appear at any point in any of the series as to infiltration of the Federation. You could have done a lot with it. It just disappeared.
And it disappeared.
I kind of feel like I don't know. I didn't read the Memory Alpha this time. I'm bad. I'm sorry, guys.
I got all that.
I feel like I've read somewhere, or just talking with other people who are big into Star Trek, that like they're kind of like the proto Borg because they pretty much did just take you over completely.
They were the proto Borg, but they're more insidious because obviously you don't know.
You don't see the cybernetic implants. They're almost better than the Borg
until you start talking about old times, and then it's a dead giveaway.
Then they're kicking you in the face.
Like, yeah.
Oh.
The parasites came back in Pocketbook's DS9 series, The Lives of Dax. where Audrid Dax and Chris Pike discover that the parasites are closely related to the Trill.
Wow.
Oh, now the Federation's like, okay, we're going to exile the Trill from the Federation.
Yeah.
We'll no longer have any dealings with them.
Right.
Well, and I'm reading those stories that take place on the Titan, and they were referencing it. So I guess it's like in the novel continuity now.
I hear the novel continuity gets a lot.
Anyway, just a side note.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's interesting, Guy. That's a cool thing with any of the novelizations of all that stuff. They can go back and revisit so much and kind of expand.
That's expand where they couldn't do in the...
That's why it's all in memory beta, so... So just to go through the run-through of this, we get the Enterprise in the very beginning. They're going to Pacifica, which sounds like a beautiful place, or an automobile
you might drive. It's the proto-Ryza, because they haven't invented Ryza yet.
Yeah, and as Dave pointed out before we started recording, is that this is one of the rare times we actually see banter on the bridge. We have...
they're all BSing with each other, and like... A horrible joke is being told by Geordi to an android who will never get the joke.
Yeah, and Data makes this very disturbing laugh. This is early Data, too, and they're still trying to figure him out. When they get a transmission code 47, emergency code just for the captain, and it happens to be... and of course, the captain's always sleeping. Ever notice when he gets like a message,
he's always sleeping? It's super important. He's got to be asleep.
You know, he was always sleeping in that somewhat glittery communion dress. it was always so awkward.
And he always had that really short bathrobe he throws on,
too.
Well,
it was so short. And you just, you know...
I know he was voted sexy man of the year at one point.
It made you feel things, and you were young and uncomfortable.
Yeah, you were like... It was like watching your uncle walk around in his underwear.
And the space sheets were like... They were normal on top, but when he folded them down, they're all like filled with glitter.
Yeah.
I wonder how long they take to get off of. How many showers you had to take to get rid of the bed glitter. Beverly, want to share this glitter with me?
But that is 90s science fiction. Of course your bed sheets would be shiny and silver.
Or maybe Picard throws glitter down in his bed before he goes to sleep. He's like, glitter. Rolls around in it.
No, I think he like spanks his glittery photo album. And I
mean, you know, not to beat a dead horse, which is entirely fun, but it's, you know, it's like he's just going into a Roman bath or something. Yes, this is what I'm wearing. This is...
He sleeps in a Roman bath.
Okay, so he gets the message from his old friend, Walker Keel, who is the captain of the Horatio. And Walker seems to know Beverly, so I guess they were all good friends back in the day before they got promoted into captains and real life took over. He asked them there's something going on. He can't really talk about it over the transmission, but he wants him to rendezvous at this obscure mining colony that's been abandoned for years. And Picard goes, well, okay, you know, I'm supposed to go to this beautiful beach, but you want me to go to an old abandoned mine shaft. All right, let's go. And he makes the order and they all go. And of course the whole bridge crew is wondering what the hell's going on.
It's like, I'm not going to get laid this week. Thanks, Picard.
Thanks, Picard.
Well, that's what you went there for.
Deanna was totally going to wear like this excellent bikini, and
she was unaware from the planet with the people who just had sex all the time. Just that V, X cut thing.
She could have done that. Yeah,
she probably picked up that designer somewhere.
Oh, I bet you she did.
Or maybe she was going to wear the thing that Tasha wore.
Or maybe she was going to go in her bridal.
Maybe.
But in
which is naked.
They're going to meet an old prospector on some world.
Yeah. Grizzle. Dag nabbit, I've been mining here Elysium for years. Nothing's coming from it.
So many pans.
So it's an interesting side note. As an interesting side note, 47 is like a number that shows up a lot in Star Trek. I don't know if you guys have.
Yeah.
It comes from Joe Manosky, who graduated from Pomona College.
And 47.
And he was one of the story writers of Next Gen, and he infected the Star Trek writers. So there's a lot of 47 that shows up. So this Order 47, you know, like in Darmok, the Enterprise reports they found 47 occurrences of the word Darmok, and in Generations, Scotty manages to beam up only 47 LLRNs before the ship is destroyed. You know, it happens all the time. I'm sorry?
8472?
Yep. 8472. You and got
four, it. 47 is also in the Voyager's serial number.
Okay. Yep. You guys are really losing me now. But anyways,
Just saying.
I do know, I know we talked about the 47 before with,
Nemechek.
Yeah, Nemechek. We talked about that at one point.
Yeah, he said it's the most common random number.
It is it's a strange occurrence.
That they did on purpose in Star Trek.
Yeah. So anyways, back to the mineshaft. Picard beams down, and we get our first look at a Bolian.
That's a fifth Bolian. I didn't even realize it was a Bolian.
Well, we're used to. We're used to the guy who cuts hair.
We're used to Mott.
Mott. Mott the barber.
And I got to say, when I saw this originally, I was like, that's a creepy looking alien.
It looked like. And he wasn't blue, so I didn't put it.
He's blue, but he's not like bright blue like they'd show him later. He basically looks like the underside of somebody's balls, but blue. And I can't get that on my head now.
I can't get out of my head like that's you have a pretty accurate description of those colors.
And this ball sack has a phaser trained on Picard.
So this walking ball sack, blue balls. Anyways, that's Captain Rix, and obviously Captain Keel shows up. And there's another Captain Scott, who's supposed to be the youngest to ever reach captain.
Until J.J. Kirk.
Well, I guess she beat out Kirk. Anyways, they basically reveal that there's some weird happenings within the Federation. There's reshuffling of different command people and ships changing, command structures. And they don't know what it actually is, but they didn't know who to trust, and they thought he could trust in Picard. Picard doesn't know if he believes him, of course, but he says he'll keep an eye out for
it. They do sound like they're crazy people, just to put it out there.
Right. So, yeah they do. So, after...
And then, like, as he walks away, like, the conversation's done.
Yeah.
Picard's walking away.
And then Captain Rix
says... And the Bolian's like, you better watch your back, Picard.
I know.
These balls are going to slap.
Exactly. You're having a problem with this one, David.
Well, it's definitely the whole episode itself has all these like I don't know what you want to call it, but there's all these like little innuendos that keep on throwing in that you would see in any kind of like maybe a Hitchcock movie or something or even just not even spy movies, but just the things that should keep you always paranoid the whole time. So, like, when he just says, you better watch your back, he's like, you're like, well, you just wonder, like, what, why? What are you guys going to do, you're always...
pull out your phases and shoot me for real this time?
So you're always wondering. I mean, obviously, he meant it, figuratively, just be careful, but it seemed like a strange thing to say as he's walking away. Picard basically tells Troy a little bit, and then they go back to Pacifica, but then the Horatio blows up. And this kind of puts in kind of like, okay, something is going on, because they don't know why the...
I love the kid. It's like, the debris is too small. We can't analyze it. And then Worf's like, well, the Horatio's been blown up to tiny pieces. And I'm like, did you have to put on like the tiny pieces at the end? Because we've kind of...
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Observing that?
Yeah. No, I mean...
you need no line. Just give him the line.
Give him the line. Yes, Michael Dorn, you can have it.
Yeah, well, he before that, he said he didn't like bathing, so...
Oh, yeah, it was, like, really weird. It's like, swimming is too much, like, bathing. It's like, go take a bath.
Go take a bath.
I order you to take a bath.
That's what that smell is on the bridge. So they basically realize that... Something or Picard realized something must be happening. So what happens then is that he asked Data to go over all these Federation,
all the official reports of the last six months.
Yeah, like it transfers, ship movements, and Data is just sitting there in his room, just taking in all this information, doing this basically data dump. and
quite literally,
yeah, and so. And then he obviously tells Riker, and they have a meeting, and they basically decide they're going to go find out and ask. They're going to go straight to the Federation headquarters and ask what's going on, which, I guess that's a direct route.
Yeah.
I, it seems a weird thing. Just go like, why don't we just go ask them?
It's like, well, why don't we?
You know, I don't know. It seems like weird. That I thought that was a weird writing tool. Just say,
well, hey, guy, let's go ask the Federation why they're acting so weird.
That's like when I have a question
sounds
about
like a great idea. Let's just do that.
I have a question about our country. I'll just go ask the president, Mr. Obama. I'll just go
hey,
in.
Hey, Obama, I've got a question. It's important.
I'll just get on my helicopter and ride. And ride. Yeah.
If there's a conspiracy going on and you're in charge of it, would you tell me? I'm just wondering.
Is Dulce Air Force Base a real thing? Obama, please tell me.
Please
tell
me.
Area 51.
Please.
What about Area 51? Tell me about Area 51.
Somehow I don't think you'd tell me.
That's my butt. I've designated Area 51 my butt. My, you know, when, yeah. So don't
you've,
go there.
You've designated it?
Yes. Obama has designated his own butt as Area 51. So I was like, don't go there.
So his butt is Area 51.
Exactly. You don't go there. You don't talk about it.
Am I the only person that appreciated Aaron's transition from ball humor to robot poop? Because it was pretty good. I mean, it was almost flawless.
Just where I go.
I mean, it was, you know. The ball humor was done. We've matured, and now
I'm shocking like that because it's a more of a you think everything went back to normal, but never did.
Nope. Why would it? It shouldn't.
It was so subtle.
It was so subtle. It was subtitled subtle.
Right. All right. So we. Where did we leave off? Okay, so they go back to Earth. And this is, I don't know, this is the first time we see them come to Earth in the series so far. Actually, besides the movies.
They went to Earth space dock, though, because the Binars earlier in the season.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Sort of.
Oh, those guys, yeah.
Let's make a hot hologram distract Riker the entire time. Even though she's not super hot, she's sort of got a Janeway look to her. But Riker will go for anything as long as it's
the 80s. It was the 80s. So yeah. Anything.
He was so dreamy. That was the whole pretense.
I do have to admit, I'm watching him in this episode. I'm like, yeah, you know what? He is a good-looking guy. He's, you know, before he, you know, he's pretty thin and, you know.
He was supposed to have the Kirk factor.
He was the Kirk factor.
But William Shatner was dashing when he was young.
Was definitely in his own mm-hmm. his own world. So he was very dreamy. Riker grew into his looks because that his first episode, the first series, he was almost so skinny, it was almost embarrassing. He's like, you know, have a sandwich. You know, I don't know. They basically, you know, they try to contact the Federation. Obviously, the Federation's not even answering their phone.
Doorbell.
Yeah. They're flying right into, like, their Federation onto Earth and nothing's happening. And finally, the admirals say, hey, we, you know, notice you're here. Why are you here?
Hey, our flagship has shown up. We just happen to notice.
We happen to notice even though we ignored your first 16 calls.
You know.
I just think that maybe these parasites are like distracted by other things, you know. I mean,
ooh, let's eat a bowl full of worms. Ooh, a bowl full of worms.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about it. Like before, they're only at like carpet level. Now they can see so much higher. So it's got to be just pretty amazing. It's like you're walking on stilts or something like that. You know, it's like this is amazing.
It's like walking in an airplane.
Yeah.
And I always felt like the mealworm.
Yeah.
Meal. Like this is just the nutrition I need. Yep. Like appreciate a steak. And you can talk to a machine and get anything you want.
I know.
They say you say Picard, your food's getting cold. They were alive. Were they like getting colder? Like were they dying? And that's why they're getting colder? Like I think if they're alive, their warmness should be relative to how warm they would always be if they're alive.
Right. Yeah. I mean worms are always kind of I think room temperature.
Yeah.
They're worm temperature, at least.
Worm temperature, nicely done there.
Why, thank you.
So, one of the admirals, Quinn, says he can't go to dinner, but he wants to see the Enterprise.
I need a tour, man. Like, I heard it's got, like, baths.
There's bathrooms.
The Worf doesn't use them.
There's a bathroom that Worf doesn't use.
This is the Klingon's bath. It is nothing on it. It's never been used.
Never been used.
The toilet, on the other hand,
oh my God,
is frightening. Yeah. With prune juice.
Prune juice and a gawk.
And a pretty liberal, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, holodeck, you know, policy. You know.
The murder that happened in there. Yeah. So when Admiral Quinn beams up, he has a quick exchange with Picard. He wants to take a tour of the Enterprise, and he's keeping
a little case.
I got to talk about the case just for a second.
It's been on my mind for the last 10 minutes.
Has it?
Yes, the case.
The case. The case was like something from our childhood. Actually, it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a Trapper Keeper, no. But it was something very similar to it. It was.
No, what? You're absolutely right.
They modified a Trapper Keeper? I love the Trapper Keeper.
I wish I could name what it was called, and I was thinking about looking for it, but I have no way to like gauge what it was actually called. But it was like a popular thing.
It looked like a cigar box or
It wasn't. It was a school case like notebook.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And they transported the parasite in, you know, like you would say a camera lens.
Yeah.
In this box.
It wasn't ventilated. You can only carry an animal around.
Not to mention, they didn't show Chief O'Brien, but like, didn't he like read that there was some organism he just beamed up? I mean, don't they have protocols?
Maybe the school case hides the organism signature?
Maybe it does. I don't know, but it still had to beam it up, right?
Yeah, like you'd think they have filters like they have for everything else.
Yeah.
You can turn off weapons, but you know, we don't notice a foreign parasite.
Again, the
it's ominous.
The transporter. Yeah, it's ominous. The transporter's technology is confounding because it always seems like they have like a way around it and then they completely forget about it like six episodes
later.
Well,
it's like, it's like they knew enough to like say, hey, look, we've got to come up with a Heisenberg compensator, which basically is the thing that's like, because you can't determine like the spin of an electron and its location at the same time. And so that's called the Heisenberg principle.
Yeah,
I may be messing this up, but it's something along those lines where like you can't map it and see its rotation at the same time, and so therefore it's called the Heisenberg principle. And the Heisenberg principle, they in Star Trek, they were smart enough to say, "Hey, look, we've got the Heisenberg compensators. This is how transporters work."
Right, right, right.
But then these weird little silly things. It's like, okay.
Quick edit. Do you want another one?
I will have another one.
One second, we're taking a drink break.
Can we just keep saying Heisenberg?
Heisenberg.
Say my name. You're goddamn right.
That's awesome.
So, guys, you're listening to us on a drink break. We don't take drink breaks very often on the show, but we're having a drink break. Drink break, drink break, Heisenberg.
Yes.
There you go.
Heisenberg.
And we've done it. It's been said.
Brian, I never could take him seriously.
Come on. Did you see the comic they have on Chief O'Brien? Chief O'Brien at work? It's the most hilarious thing.
It is the best comic ever.
It's basically just, it's a picture of him behind the transporter pad, and then like everyone's doing everything, and he's just like, I could come. They're like, no, don't worry.
No, you just stand there with your popcorn hair.
And he goes, it'll be like, popcorn hair. No, but he was like, O'Brien, beam us down to the planet. Just beam me right from the bridge to the planet. And he'd be like, well, you could come down here. He goes, no, I don't have time for that. Just beam me. And he's like, all right. You know,
and then he beams up like Tasha in one episode, in one comic strip.
And she's
naked. And he's like, oh, hey, where are my clothes? He beams her up like the smallest thong he can find.
Yeah.
And he just has this weird little smile.
It's just they're just like you know, six panel comics. But I actually think the guy...
I think he's still making one.
He's still making them, but he released a book on it. Like, he's actually a book on, like, O'Brien at Work or whatever.
It's Chief O'Brien at Work, yeah. It's
Chief O'Brien at Work. Yeah, that's the name of the strip.
Hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
That's all he does.
I mean, some are more funny than others.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, there's only so much you can do with the material, but, I mean, it's probably the laziest comic ever.
I'd like to see one where he's, like, a prisoner of war of the Cardassians.
Chief O'Brien at Work.
He's in the mines.
With quotations.
He's in the mines. Anyways.
Our liquor break is over now.
Liquor break is over.
We're now back to the regularly scheduled episode.
Dave, you can edit in 3, 2, 1.
Why don't we just leave it?
He's going to edit it?
Don't edit anything.
Fuck it. Why, let's just leave it in.
Why would you do that?
Yeah. That was too good.
Maybe people will ask us for more alcohol breaks where we just don't even, we just talk about random stuff for however the duration of getting drunk.
Don't encourage our alcoholism, okay, guys?
We're symptomatics.
It's bad enough as it is. I'm sucking cock for a beer here, guys.
Stop it. We're trying to talk right now.
Okay.
It's all right.
Get that cock out of your mouth. all right. All right. So we get back to conspiracy.
What, we were talking about conspiracy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Since when?
I know.
So
I thought we switched to Chief of Brian's hatred of isolinear chips.
We can get back to that.
Oh boy,
let's finish that thought though. But so Quinn beams up, and Picard basically flags him as something's wrong with him. It doesn't seem like Quinn.
But Riker, keep an eye on him.
Riker tells Riker to watch him. Picard beams down to Earth. Basically on Earth he's met, and it seems kind of empty. The two admirals are there, and what's his name from the previous episode?
I can't remember, but I hate him. It's the guy that, if you've seen the previous episode where he was in, you hate him.
Rimmick. Dexter,
yes.
Rimmick, yeah. Yeah, he was in the previous episode where he's like, someday I'd like to join the Enterprise.
Well, it's not the previous one, but like somewhere in season one.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't the previous episode, I don't think.
No, you're
right.
It was
earlier in the season, but if you see him and you hate him, then it's probably the guy.
If you see some guy you like to punch in the face.
If you like Rimmick, I'm sorry.
I don't think anybody
If you like Rimmick, email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Read this on the air.
You know what I mean? It's funny is that there's certain people that are typecast as people like they're assholes, mm-hmm. Or will be forever. Like the kid from Game of Thrones, who is the...
Joffrey?
Yeah, Joffrey. He will be just forever just known as a gigantic asshole. Like,
But he wasn't an asshole in Batman Begins.
No, he wasn't.
He was a little...
He's a little asshole. But that being said, I mean, it's just like there's certain people. I mean, could you imagine that you're – I mean
Batman, Batman gives him that thing, and he's going to be so snotty to the kids at school. I saw Batman.
And that kid turned to be King Joffrey. No, but it was it's a strange phenomenon. And I guess if you're getting hired, who gives a damn? You know, you're getting a paycheck.
Paid.
Yeah,
you generally.
As a side note from the peanut gallery, Rimmick showed up before in Coming of Age.
There you go.
Just – thing, along with Admiral Quinn.
Right.
Admiral Quinn, medicine woman.
Admiral Quinn, medicine man.
Well, anyway, so Picard's down on the planet, and Riker goes up on the – when he's up on the ship, he goes to visit on Quinn, and Quinn has his trapper keeper open and is looking at his
– he's like almost stroking the little parasite.
Which is – the whole thing's bizarre. It's like he's just staring at it, and – he wants to show Riker what's in there. And Riker says,
"Want to see what's in my box?"
Yeah, and Riker's like, "Let me get my
science officer."
He's like, "Doesn't want him. He wants you." And they probably have the best line of the whole episode is when he has a couple. They have some blows, and he goes.
But the Riker reaction shots are the absolute best. He's got like these really big eyes. Like,
Yeah. No, but it was vitamins. They do.
they do well,
wonders like, for the body.
Yeah,
he, like,
yeah.
Roundhouse kicked Riker like in the face.
At yeah.
Point. It won't like your science officer. It does like you.
Yeah, exactly.
Vitamins.
Minerals,
they do wonders but, for the body.
And for the rest of his career, any time he got snotty, was, remember that time you got your ass kicked by an 80-year-old man?
Yeah. well, and then it compounds because. You know, just like when you call 911, you know, 30 minutes later after everyone's been murdered, now Geordi and Worf show up without phasers.
How is Geordi a security officer?
He's in a red suit, so yeah. Anything could happen. And actually, it still doesn't
security
make any sense.
Security is yellow.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And they don't have phasers. They're just running.
Yeah, they don't have phasers.
Geordi gets thrown through the plywood doors.
He's like, I got my weapons here.
And Worf's like, what are you? After he like knocks him over the wooden table.
And so, of course, you know, he throws Geordi through the doors like a rag doll. And then he, you know, like, he wants to fight Worf. And then you have the cut to commercial. And as a young kid, he's like, you're thinking like, okay, Worf's going to throw down here. We're going to see a Klingon really fight.
Nope. Worf just gets knocked to his knees.
Worf, again, as always, gets his ass kicked.
Worf was useless for pretty much three seasons. I mean, it was
almost
like,
every season.
Well, once they started developing his character after Roddenberry was stepped aside.
Or dead.
Yeah, but I mean, my point is, like, they started developing his characters and doing more. But yeah, Worf was just
It doesn't matter. Worf will lose against anyone unless it's another Klingon.
That was an interesting statement.
He loses against 80-year-old man.
You're right.
He loses against a blue barrel. He loses against the Chewbacca monster.
The blue barrel that crippled him. Yes.
He loses against the Wookiee that kissed Wesley the Chewbacca monster shapeshifter thing that kisses Wesley that Wesley's got a hard on for in season one. He loses against the grandmother of that thing.
You know,
if Worf gets in a fight with an alien, he loses. If he gets in a fight with a Klingon, he wins.
I don't think there's any. You'd think there's an upside to dating a shapeshifter, right?
I would think it'd be amazing.
Think it's amazing until they decide to do something horrible mid coitus.
Yeah.
You know? Tonight. But you know what we're going to do tonight?
No.
Oh,
I've been watching. I've been watching all these shows. And on these shows, they were showing the Abominable Snowman. So tonight, just indulge me.
It's like, you think I didn't shave? Here, check this out.
It's worse than that. I've been watching Tom Cruise movies.
Oh, no, that could be really short.
Well, anyways. Worf gets his ass kicked, as usual, by Admiral Quinn. Admiral Quinn takes him out.
Medicine woman,
Admiral Quinn. And it's only until... Crusher shows up. Dr. Crusher comes up and just shoots him repeatedly with her phaser. Why she has a phaser?
Yes, your medical personnel come with phasers, but your security personnel don't.
I like how Geordi recovered pretty quickly.
You might be a redneck. Yeah.
Like if you threw me through a door made of
metal door.
No, we're talking space steel, right? Yeah, this isn't like an aluminum screen door in your house. Like there's some internal bleeding going on.
And what does he say? He says, "If I could see, I'd be seeing stars." I mean, let's be clever here while we're at it.
So
it looks like Riker's lost a lot of blood. There's a lot of blood underneath that glass that he's laying against.
Yeah.
And Worf's like, "What is he?" And Beverly's like, "Oh, I'm not going to check on him." I'm just like, "Well, I guess we'll have to find out."
Well, and she brings Quinn back to them, back to sick bay. Basically, finds out that the parasite's living right on a spinal cord, yeah. Right on his neck area.
It injects the adrenal glands, which makes him super strong and super naked.
You can see right through their clothes. The next part is that the giveaway is they have a gill, which is basically a little – looks like a
– spike.
Coming out of the back of their neck.
But it dances.
It does.
Very seductively to some people.
And at that point, we basically have Picard. She's giving Picard this information while he's down on the planet.
Oh, Picard, your food's getting cold. Okay, I gotta go. Get Riker down here now.
There goes Riker. Kind of sneaks up on Beverly for that minute.
Jump scares her,
and you do
it goes to commercial.
And the one thing you did think that he might have got Beverly right after that. And this is where the episode kind of got cool because like the parasites could have taken over the Enterprise or something really cool. And obviously, Riker didn't have it. And from there, Riker beams down, basically fooling Picard to think that he has the parasite.
And he's even got like the thing sticking out of the back of his neck. And look, welcome, brother.
Yeah.
You were supposed to be for the doctor. It's like, well, the plan's changed.
Yes.
Very dramatic.
And we see Riker eating worms, which will not be the first or first or last time we'll see Riker eat worms.
He doesn't actually put them in his mouth. He plays with the food a little bit and goes be like, ugh.
And then he reaches for his phaser.
And then it's the longest reach ever because he's holding his hand above his head.
Yeah.
And then he has to reach all the way down to where his phaser is. Yeah. It's not even a subtle move.
Let's talk about the phaser. I think it was the first and last presentation of like the little laser
the pointer Gen 1
phaser.
Yeah. The Gen 1. Little, you know. Well, yeah, Beverly had it too. She shot the guy. Like, the laser beam that shot out of it was bigger than the thing.
Yeah. Right, right. And I did thought it was funny as when Picard first sat down, before Riker showed up, that the Admiral was sitting down, and then the security guard just sat down with him, like, yeah, I'll have something to eat, too.
Hey! I'm hungry! But also before the commercial...
And nobody's going to join the leadership for dinner.
Like, when does that ever happen? The ensign sits down, like, get the fuck out of here.
I did think it was weird. It's like, they just had the extra. It was probably just a grip. They gave him a red shirt. And
I'm sure they did. It was just bizarre. I saw that. I was like, what? So Riker takes out the
bugs that eat together stay together.
So Riker takes out basically everyone except one of the remaining admirals, and they have a chase down the hallways. He shoots that.
They dodge lasers. Oh, they dodge phasers.
Are you telling me
I can dodge phasers?
Yeah, they do kind of dodge.
There was a lot of phaser dodging through that entire scene.
I mean, you figure it goes the speed of light, but somehow they can jump out of the way.
Very slowly and awkwardly, too.
Then I just want to bring this out, too, is that when they shot Captain Scott when she was in there, she has the parasite leaves her and runs out. And this is where we have, like, this stop animation kind of thing, and we see it again when they shoot the Admiral. They're chasing down the hallway. He has that, and it's sort of like...
crawls out of the mouth. It's really, it's kind of disturbing seeing this thing, huge thing, crawl out of their mouth.
Honestly, even from the day I saw it, I only could think of Peter Gabriel... in one of his videos.
Sledgehammer.
Like Sledgehammer or something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's my brain went exactly to that, you know. So it has that stop motion with the parasite crawling, you know, across the carpet. And then we see the parasite grows under the door, which who knew that?
There's enough room.
There's
for
enough
a parasite.
Room under well, these
they,
metal doors.
They modified the doors for the parasites.
Oh, maybe they did.
Apparently, like, spiders and cockroaches can do that too. So that's not, you know.
Yeah.
So now we've established they had a cockroach in their mouth. That's added a whole level of yuck. This
purple cockroach.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean it wasn't a dildo?
Jesus. No. No. That was for later.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the cockroach, the parasite, crawls into Remick's mouth, where his neck starts to bulge, like you brought out before.
At the very beginning. That's one of the coolest looking parts
of
the thing.
It is probably one of the cooler things.
It's disturbing, but it just looked so good.
And I you got to wonder.
That's a practical
is he like
effect.
Is his body just filled with them? Is he just like this? Like,
yeah. I mean, as we learned.
Yeah. No, but I mean, were there like 50 of them in there just all crawling around, swimming, you know? Yeah.
My theory is that those things start off that small and then they slowly grow into like one of those big mamas.
It would be cool.
Inside you.
But, yeah. It takes time.
But then comes my absolute favorite part. When Riker and Picard walk in and they have this brief back and forth like, all right, we're totally just going to.
We're going to kill this.
We're not. There's no stun setting for this guy.
No, but it's like, they're like the guy's like, Remick is like, we mean you no harm. But his neck is bulging.
But this is the best part. They start blasting him in the chest with phasers.
They don't even try to negotiate.
Slowly, that's not just that. But then they kind of casually migrate up to his face. And that's what I love about it. I have this vision in my head that they kind of made eye contact. Like, I've never shot a dude in the face with a phaser before. Let's just do it.
On kill setting.
Because it is. They just casually move those beams up to the face.
Well, it's like with a laser pointer. It's like, you know where you're trying to go, but you aim for the big point, and then you move from there, and let you know where you're shooting.
Right.
Right.
Start at center of mass, and then, you know, they're just honing in on the target right there. That's what it is.
And the reality is that his head explodes, which is was pretty gruesome. And next his chest explodes.
Well, his chest doesn't explode. It just like
it sort of disintegrates.
It just disintegrates, and then there's like this weird creature in there. I don't know how it fits with the rest of his organs, and the guy is.
It's obviously melting away. Yeah. It's melting away. So.
And then they're like, all right, now we got to blow that up.
Well, I just love too. It says we see. We see. We seek peaceful coexistence, which is basically the Federation's motto, but they're like, Alice, squish this.
Screw that, you're weird bugs. We don't like bugs.
Yeah, so.
Well, it's not just that. What did you do to the dude? I mean, obviously, that's not very peaceful.
You know? No, not at all.
No. I'm telling you, once the phages moved to the face, everything changed. It was like they weren't, you know.
Well, so, and obviously they kill the queen mother. And after that, it kind of wraps up quickly. They basically find out that Remnick was sending out a...
homing beacon
onto Earth.
Calling the Borg.
and that was basically the last of it. And they, you know, they said, well, how many... We don't know how many are out there, but there could be more. And that's about it.
And they did the whole, like, Clone War episode one thing where they killed the mother ship or whatever, and all the other ones just died and crawled out.
But the concerning thing with the beacon, meaning we sent the beacon out, which means they have ships.
Or something.
Right? So they've just probably infected entire worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so in the obviously the whole episode ends at that point, and it's only season one, so, you know, they probably didn't even know if they're going to be on. I mean, maybe they did at that point, but for next season. But as we said, this episode begs for, like,
continuation.
To pick this up. Maybe not in season two, but maybe season three or something like that.
Something.
And it never happened.
I waited for that entire damn series for that to, like, resurface because I thought it had so much potential.
It did. It had a great potential.
I mean, that's just the problem, unfortunately, with Star Trek until Deep Space Nine. Like, continuous stories meant nothing.
Yeah,
to the series, and
besides, like a two-parter.
Well, I mean, yeah, you have your two-parters.
They started once the series evolved. You'd have your Geordi Power Hour and your Data Power Hour, and that's just like every season, you know,
Worf losing to something Power Hour.
Poor Worf,
like a blue barrel.
Yes, like a blue barrel.
Yeah,
and some bad doctors.
I'm sure he beat his son a few times.
Oh, that would have been a great episode, Alexander. 20 bat left lashes.
I'm pretty sure that Worf might have abused his child.
We're just saying.
Yeah.
Or just brushed his hair a lot.
Maybe. Because that hair was super shiny and super neat.
It was.
For someone who doesn't bathe.
It's honorable to comb hair.
So we kind of do a, like, takeaway after watching it. I'll let maybe Dave start. Just what your thoughts on that, of this episode, seeing it again.
It was great seeing it again. First season is really, really rough. This is one of the least rough points of season one, I think.
It's a high point.
It had great, you know, like we just said, like, the worst part about this episode is that they didn't ever bring it back up ever again.
Right.
But it's a good takeaway. It's fun. Like, phasers do whatever you want this week. Sometimes they vaporize you. Sometimes they'll melt your face and make it explode. It just depends.
Yeah, right,
it's what phasers will do to you this week.
And then, Guy, what is your thoughts on this episode?
Well, this wasn't one of my favorite episodes. Although clearly it was one of the few episodes that my mom and I watched together, and I got interesting behind the scenes commentary. Which is really weird because I still haven't been able to find anybody else to verify that there was a strike going on with the censors at the time, but I think there really was. And so that always sticks in my memory. Short of that, I really wish that they had come back to this, although they did lead into it earlier because that was the whole point of having Remick and Admiral Quinn before at coming of age. But yeah, they never returned to this. So I was like, well, that's kind of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it has still a lot of the feelings of the first season of Star Trek, which is still kind of like they don't know where their legs are.
Yeah. So, right, of course.
Clearly they don't know where their head and chest is either.
No, you're right. You're right about that. We just know that in the future people wear a lot of, like, sparkly, like, body suits.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where
that's what we've got. It's a lot of glitter.
Lots of glitter in your bed.
No.
and Chris, obviously, you is an episode that you enjoyed. So
it always stood out to me, and I thought because it was strong for the time, right? The special effects I thought were strong,
right.
And I felt it was disappointing because that was a storyline that you really could have taken up at any point,
right?
And you could
in any of the series,
and you could have even, you know, you could that could have exactly any of the series that could have manifested itself. And it's just one of those kind of weird things that floats out there.
My feeling, yeah, especially with the idea, I'm sorry, especially with the idea that might be related to the Trill, that could come back and be really interesting somewhere along the line.
Yeah, it could be. My thought was the directing, I definitely had like a feeling of a horror film. Like I said, some like a spy Hitchcock feel to some of it, directing, just the paranoia that's it developed and had it just to me, it just had strong callings to like B movie, B horror movies, you know, with the cheesy effects that, I mean, it's good for TV, of course, but for movies, there's like, you're just like, this is so goofy, you know? So I don't know. I enjoyed it, but it was definitely one of those episodes that you're like, it had all these like callbacks when I watch it now. And when I originally watched it, I don't think I was shocked, but I think I was definitely like, wow, that's pretty.
It's because you had the first real sense of Star Trek of like what could have been is like you would see in like Josh Whedon for it was like the big bad, you know, mm-hmm. period of time. And look, I mean, let's be honest. If we look at a show like Stargate, which I was a fan of, the right. TV show, what they did with like, you know, the parasites in that show, and that just went on until they just kind of
burned it out.
They burned it out, and then now we have something worse.
Yeah.
Right. There was a lot of potential there, and I think Star Trek was a good venue for that. They just missed opportunity as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, again,
maybe they'll make a return in Discovery. Who knows?
Yeah.
Isn't that show set prior?
Yeah.
It is, but it
didn't. Well, apparently in the Apocrypha, it was Christopher Pike that was involved, so.
Right, but.
With a Trill connected to these guys, so.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Definitely a fun episode, especially for season one. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Later episodes of Next Generation are obviously better written and. The effects are far better as well, but this is pretty, pretty amazing for season one.
I mean, we could have had poison glove pole dancing. So, you know, given a choice,
yes. Could have.
Pole dancing wouldn't have been too bad.
Another thing I read is that they wanted to do tie like the original idea of this, not just was the conspiracy, like, they want to do a Federation coup, but also they want to do callbacks of the Iran-Contra affair. But obviously I just, you know, I don't know how that script would have even worked out. I mean, it doesn't even make sense how you could even make those tie-ins.
I've always wondered, like, who was the first guy that got exposed to one of those?
That red shirt guy. That's why he was sitting.
That's why he was sitting at the table.
They're not in this quadrant of space, like something.
He's like,
you know,
hey, look at that little bird.
Well, like they showed like Data's, his graph that he plotted out. They showed like a point of origin, and then it spread from there. Mm-hmm. I wish it would have been fun if they would have kind of gone into it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those big mysteries that will never be answered. You know, I mean, obviously, maybe in some novelizations, but so yeah, good episode, and I'm glad we talked about it because I hadn't thought about this episode in a while, and it is one of those episodes I really do enjoy. With that being said, we have, you know, we have the whole idea of we're, you know, obviously we got Chris here to talk about Ominous and anything else that we want to talk about with Chris because we have him here. You're also, like I said before, the co-founder and festival director for the Buffalo Dream Fantastic Film Festival. What's going on with that? I mean, I know you work your ass off for that.
It is another full time job that I basically don't get paid much for.
run yourself ragged for.
It's absolutely and I mean this sincerely. It's like a labor of love. My partner is Gregory Lamberson, who is an author and filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Greg, I believe, has about 11 novels published, and he just wrapped his latest film called Johnny Gruesome. But this is our fourth year. We've been working on festivals together for 7, mm-hmm. but this is our fourth year since we founded Buffalo Dreams. We're a genre film festival, and we really just focus on we do pretty much any genre, but it's horror, science fiction, fantasy, action, mm-hmm. animation, and there's so much good stuff. And I'm confident to say we show more films than any other festival in the area. Last year, I believe we did 103 movies. We showed in 7 days.
Yeah.
So it is, you come in, it's usually a feature film paired with 2 to 3 shorts, depending on length. And we host filmmakers from all over the world.
Right.
It really is. It's a great experience. And when he and I started out working together, it was on a horror film festival. And every year we'd get these films that were so good. They weren't horror, but they were so good. We'd end up showing them
anyways.
And every year we get the, we call it a, what the fuck am I watching film?
Right.
Where you don't know what you're watching, but you can't stop watching it.
Right.
And we get one of those at least every year. So we always have to put that into the festival, but it's a great event. And, you guys are more than welcome to attend.
Sure. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's the one thing is, you know, I mean, obviously you get all these submissions probably every year.
Our submissions are still open for like another week or so. And, we're at 300 submissions.
That's a lot.
Well, it's a lot because we actually watch them all.
Right.
And it is, that's not as common as you think some film festivals, not all the films get watched. It's not a great thing.
Well, with that in mind, like it's, you know, you and Greg, does anybody else watch them with you to grade them?
We used to be a team of people that would watch. We'd all watch them, and then we'd have this vote, and we'd always get into an argument because what it used to be for years was Greg and I tended to fight for the ones that were more story driven. A film might not be as pretty,
right,
but it has a great script, and maybe you have a great actor carrying it off, and that can make up for a lot.
Yeah.
If you have a really low budget. So we were always ended up fighting for those films or just some obscure one.
Right.
So we pretty much watch everything because it's, and you know, we also will have, so we'll have somebody come in and read the scripts because we have a screenplay competition. And that helps because we get a lot of those. But we watch every film, and when it's 300 films, and there's a lot of features. That's a lot of time. I have to bucket time for it every night all year long.
That's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot. It's a big commitment.
It's a massive commitment, but we laugh. We're talking about we're not doing it for the monetary reward.
Yeah,
we're doing it just because it's a passion thing, and it's some of these people that come into town are just fantastic people.
Well, on top of that, too, I mean, and you have your finger in this way more than I ever have. Is how much of it actually comes from the Buffalo area, like films? I mean, I know there are definitely I'm aware of some films that have been made around here, but
so.
What's the percentage usually?
Well, we really go out of our way to show local films. It's really important to us. I mean, it's actually part of our mission statement is to build our local film community. Mm-hmm. And we've had some success. It's tough. And I'll be really blunt about this. Like we'll show a lot of local films. And I'm always stunned by this because we have people, and I'm not exaggerating, flying from Australia or London to spend days. And if you're a filmmaker, it's a networking event. You meet other filmmakers, you make friends. I mean, I've made a lot of friends over the last several years. And they stay for the week. And local filmmakers have this odd tendency to show up, watch their film, and then leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get a full – we give them all, like, full festival passes. Come every day. Meet these people.
Right.
And that boggles my mind.
Yeah.
That seems like a huge missed opportunity.
Well, it is. I mean, if professionally it is, in my opinion. But I think just to like, if you really care about your art, to meet these other people that are so talented. Yeah. And they're really one. I mean, they all go out to dinner together and they build these friendships. And I don't know why you wouldn't do that. But we still, every year, we really support. We want to build up the film community here.
Yeah.
And Greg, I can say he just finished one of his most recent feature. And I think he probably employed 60 local people
That's
for his
great.
Crew.
That's awesome. You know? That's awesome. Yeah. I am pretty ignorant when it comes to how much, but I know, it's a lot of work to put into a film, even if you're doing it on a low budget, you know, to gather that many people, to do the shooting and then the editing and all the post-production stuff that you have to do to it as well. So
a lot of people get into filmmaking and it's because everybody wants to be a filmmaker. I mean, let's be honest, everybody.
I got an idea for a film.
What people don't realize is that the amount of work, and you really have to take it seriously. Like if you're a low budget filmmaker and you have a decent budget, you need to run it like a military operation. And it's not because you're a jerk, it's just because you have budgetary constraints.
Right.
And there's rules. If it's a SAG film or even SAG ultra low budget, there's rules you have to follow.
Right.
And you have to really be professional about it. It makes a big difference, but it's a learning process. You know, if you're making a 5-minute movie, you know, you can afford to make some mistakes and whatnot.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I mean, I've never been involved with that, but I do have a lot of respect for anybody who actually does that and tries to put a film together on a shoestring budget with a bunch of actors who are probably a little flaky.
And sometimes in those cases, you know, it doesn't always work. When you just use your friends, it's not always going to work because they might not take you as seriously.
Right.
But yeah. There's other times you get some incredible
performances.
Stuff. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's a movie out there right now we screened a few years ago. It was called The Shower. And it's a great movie. It has now been renamed by their distributor as Killer Party.
Killer Party.
And it's out there streaming right now, and anybody can look it up. And I highly recommend you. It's a great film to watch.
Killer Party.
Killer Party. Killer Party. Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. And go ahead. Were you going to say something?
Well, I just wanted to say to Chris that that Guy Davis with us, he's actually he's a comic artist, too, and he does an online comic, USS Tamerlan, for Star Trek. And I was just wondering if Guy had any questions for you since you're both in the comics.
For specifically for the comics or the production, you mean?
Or I mean, for anything. But I mean, I know it's probably been hard to get a word in edgewise, so I just wanted to
Yeah, because we're all such loudmouths.
No, you guys have been fine. No, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, what's your favorite color? You know, how fast can a fully laden swallow fly? Things like that. the artwork is lovely. I've been looking over the promo material that you sent, and I really do like the artwork you've gotten. And you said in your promo material that you'd gotten professional artists, not new guys and stuff like that. We'd said that earlier in the podcast. Who can you give us some of the examples on air of some of the people that you have that are working on this, the artists that are working on this, and well, where they came from?
Bart Sears is like the name people recognize, and Ron Mars, he's a writer. Bart's done a ton of stuff. If you Google him, you'll see everything that he's done. And we also have Andy Smith on board, who's great, and Tom Rainey as well. Tom Rainey actually just did a great variant cover for Harley Quinn #1 that we're getting some in of. And he's talented. And this is with Ominous, with every issue we publish, we do a variant version, pretty much a sketch variant that has a couple characters on it wrap around. So when we're having different artists come in, and there's some names that you would really recognize coming in soon. I can't really announce anything, but simultaneously with that, we are also building a creator list. We're also looking for like newer artists that can submit portfolios to us that might be interested in.
That's awesome. Yeah. Speaking of variants, by the way, I noticed you have a black cover variant, which I thought was kind of interesting. I've never seen those before.
You know what? And I'm glad you said that because nobody does them. And we decided we're going to do we have a white variant cover and a black variant cover. And the black was, they use more gold markers on it, but we've gotten some great sketches on those.
That's awesome.
Black covers, yeah.
Yeah, and
As somebody who continually buys those things and then sketches on covers, I really appreciate like weird and strange new combinations. I have a whole bunch of gold pins and silver pins and things for black. So that's just really cool.
Yeah, those are great. People still tend to, you know, they'll gravitate towards the white, I think, because it's easier sometimes. But especially if you get one at the show and the guys are there and they do a sketch for you, like there's some really great stuff that's been done on those black covers. With the variants you'll see when the legendary ones come out, those tend to be white covers, but it has a full character printed like wraparound on it.
Right.
That's cool. That's cool.
And we have two additional, not as part of Ominous, but this sister company, Sleeping Giant Collectibles. We actually produced two variant covers. Both are Neil Adams covers. One is for Civil War Civil War II #1, and then Star Wars Force Awakens #1.
Which Civil War is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of Civil Wars going on.
4 score and 7 years ago.
Not that Civil War.
Oh, wait, sorry.
But yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, something that they've wanted to do for years, and now it's just with financing, you can come together and do it. You know?
And we were talking before, I don't know if we got this on the actual podcast. So Bart Sears did a Brute and Babe comic. And did you mention that he's still going to be working on that? Or?
Well, Brute and Babe was, that was, so essentially the legendary comics are kind of finishing that up is what they're seeing. So those are the characters that tend to be in the Legendary. And like I said, once we hit issue 4, it's new material, and it'll lead into like the launch of the kind of the flagship titles.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he, Bart Sears was he the original? Like, I mean, he was the guy who launched Ominous by himself mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I thought. I didn't know if anybody else was involved with it. And yeah, it's great because, you know, to have a Buffalo based, you know, publisher coming up with these comics and with the high quality art and writing with these is going to be great to see. So,
yeah. And it's great because the guys will send kind of sneak peek of some of the pages when they finish them, and they're great. I mean, it's like,
no, I mean, the art's amazing. Yeah, I mean, just, geez, I mean, gorgeous. Just, I'm sure just the pencils alone are probably amazing. So mm-hmm. it's just beautiful to see. Yeah. What was I going to say for Ominous itself, you guys have, you have so much talent, and you said you're bringing in more talent. So does that mean we might see more comic titles come up, or?
We have to get these launched.
Launched
out there.
One thing at a time.
Let's get these like out there.
Put on now.
And, but it's all part of a, you know, there's a schedule and a plan to like get them all.
Right.
You know,
right.
And finish out the original Ominous stuff.
Great. Yeah, I'm excited about it. I didn't, you know, I think I made the joke with you. It was like, how do you get all these cool jobs? You know,
I literally just fell into this. I had a friend that called me and said, hey, you like comics, right? I'm like, yeah. Like, well, there might be a job. I'm like, I'll go to the interview. And that's just how it works.
What the hell, dude?
And I didn't, you know, I had
that's no, awesome.
But the best part is I just didn't know this was happening right in our backyard, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know until way later. So, right. I mean, you know, I heard when I was at Nickel City Comic Con that Ominous was there. I was like, that was like a long time ago. I couldn't, you know, it was so, you know, it was like fuzzy in the back of my mind. And I didn't know that, honestly, I didn't even know that. I thought maybe they were still around, and I just didn't realize that they went away for a while. So, but that's great. And I can't wait to see what else comes out. So, like I said, of course, we'll put all the links there for our, in the show notes.
In the show notes, click on them. So you can check them out.
I can send you just a few more links too. And, you know, I say that one of the best parts about my job, it's, among other things, there's a full size Iron Man suit in my office when I walk in.
What?
And it scares the hell out of me every time I go in the office at night. Like, I forget it's there.
Really?
And that's, it's like, awesome. There's just a dude standing next to me. And I
oh my God. Panic
yeah. Email me links and I'll throw them in the show notes.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, this has been it's great to have you here and just to, I enjoy talking with you anyways, but I mean, just talking about, you know, the comic for Ominous coming up, and also just talking about Conspiracy as well is just fun as hell. So
I meant to reach out to you last year because we showed, there is the, there's a company that's doing like, the kind of unproduced scripts for the original series.
Right.
And we showed, and it's great stuff, and the effects are really good. We showed one of those episodes last
year.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, I love that. I'm a big original series fan. So,
yeah.
Cool stuff.
Because we grew up on it.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we grew up on.
Instead of being a 14-year-old watching Conspiracy, or 15 guy.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. Like I said, I kept looking at Wes, going, "I could be on that bridge.
I could,
but no,
I could
Will Wheaton instead."
Will Wheaton in his rainbow jumper. I'll still never get that.
Oh, my God.
That horrible sweater. I could be wearing that
horrible All the children had horrible things. Look at Jake. Poor Jake. I love the thing on Facebook that says, who wore it better, Jake or a bus? I think the bus seat wore it better.
Yeah.
It's definitely tighter and more form-fitting on the bus seat.
And think about it.
Not that I would want it tight and form-fitting on Jake, but...
Guy,
I was supposed to say that's going south.
Guy, if you were in that rainbow jumper, you'd have the opportunity to be making out with Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd.
See, we've talked about this before.
And the Wookiee and the Wookiee Monster's daughter or whatever.
And then you could.
Yeah, Wookiee Monster's daughter wasn't she Famke Jensen?
I don't know.
I don't know her name, but she was good looking until she turned into a Wookiee thing.
And then you could,
and then you could
run away with that rapey traveler. So
sometimes that happens with sobriety.
Oh no!
So you're saying that episode was a metaphor for staying sober?
Oh,
what did I do?
Now I have to gnaw my arm off.
Oh man, Beverly, got any like medicine for down there?
Mom, I killed another one. You
know? That's why we have the Star Trek STD.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of Star Trek STD, my brother wrote us an email about our Beyond STDs episode. It's kind of long, so I will read it. And I will respond to it and anyone else, guys, particularly because it's an episode that you and I did together.
It's snarky about me.
About us both. So my brother says, "What's up, guys? We're recording a podcast."
It happened.
So,
what's your brother's name?
My brother's name is Joshua.
Joshua, okay.
Joshua.
Hi, Joshua.
He says, "I realize I could have just called or texted you, but I know how much like you're reading emails on the show." He said, "In Beyond STD's episode, there was a debate on whether."
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's a debate on. Sorry, I lost my place when I was like that. Watching. There's a debate on whether or not Sulu was gay. I think I can settle this. The Enterprise B at the beginning sent off next of Star Trek Generations. The new Helm officer is introduced to Kirk as Sulu's daughter. Not only is the person in question Japanese, but she also looks like she could even be related to George Takei. This seems an indication enough that she's clearly meant to have be his actual daughter, not someone who was adopted, especially given the fact there was no previous hint or indication Sulu was gay, except for him being from San Francisco, which he put in parentheses.
Could happen.
I never thought about the San Francisco link.
Yeah, it's good.
I grew up.
Well, why would you think of that while talking about homosexuality?
No, it's fine. But it's great. I completely understand George Takei not being okay with J.J. Sulu being gay, although he did kind of recant on it a little bit after he complained about it.
Yeah.
It shows the people responsible for the decision were more concerned about riding Takei's nuts than being true to the original vision of Star Trek. If I were in his shoes, I would have considered the move to be patronizing and even borderline insulting, which is kind of the impression I got from Takei at the beginning before he kind of changed his mind.
Right.
I can also help with another question. You said in the same episode they didn't understand how a century-old bird of prey could take down a galaxy-class starship. Malcolm McDowell sabotaged Doherty's visor so the Duros could see through as he returned to the Enterprise. They waited to see Georgie in the engineering. They could see the frequency that the shields are currently using after calibrating the disruptors. They could bypass the shields completely. I don't care. It's still a 100-year-old ship. Also, ever since the Borg came, rotate your shield frequencies.
I really don't like to talk about that movie.
Rotate Generations. Your shield frequencies.
Because
even Tuvok knows how to do that when the Borg comes.
I'll address 2 points on that email. You know, I never really thought Sulu was gay, but I thought he was kind of gay, right? and the other thing, that the kind, of course he could have, because no gay man has ever had a child with a woman. I mean, but who cares, right? I mean, it's not something that ever crossed my mind.
Right.
But as for Generations, I always felt that the final episode of the series, to All Good Things, should have been the first movie.
Yeah.
It would have been a far, far stronger box.
I agree. 110%.
Having John DeLancey in the movie. Yeah. Oh my goodness. That would have been amazing.
And it's that myopia that exists at studios that they felt, you know, only William Shatner could help them make that movie work when it just needed a good script because had good actors. And
you could even have Will Shatner come through one of those portals.
Yeah. But not, you know, I fell off a bridge.
They didn't need.
No, you didn't need
a handoff.
No, you didn't.
You didn't need a handoff. It just needed to be a good action movie.
Yeah.
The Duros sisters didn't need to be killed. They didn't need
I think they did need to be killed at some point.
He likes the Duros. He wants to jump there, but I think
that's
they're
fine. But you know, they have no, they don't need to be in any movies.
Well, no, but they didn't even need to be in the movies. They were treated as henchmen, and they're only really henchmen to the Romulans.
They are henchmen,
right? And to be
a henchmen, they are.
To address the Demora Sulu thing, of course, Demora was in Generations, and it was played by Jacqueline Joan Kim, who actually is Korean. I mean, not like that really makes much of a difference. I think what he was trying to say was that she was Asian.
Also, John Cho is Korean.
John Cho is Korean, and not only that, the little actress that they had in the movie to play Demora, clearly, was also, I think, Korean. So, but the point, of course, is that in the movie they show two Asian
males, so it would seem reasonable that if they were to use some futuristic technology to create a child out of that, which it's the 23rd century, who knows? Maybe you've got some way of being able to mix your genetic code and create a child.
That's actually an excellent point, Guy. I mean, you even think about the idea of behind, you know, Vulcans and humans mixing their genetic code. It doesn't make any sense unless there's some way you can sequence those genes together somehow. I mean, it just it doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I just, for some reason.
And that was addressed in Terra Prime a little bit.
Yeah. No,
In
Enterprise.
So, I mean,
right.
Yeah, in Enterprise.
You know, now that we're talking about, you know, future technology, all I could think, I don't know why my mind wandered to it. I was just thinking at the end of Wrath of Khan, like, why weren't there, like, Westboro Baptist Church ships protesting the funeral? Is it launch to Genesis?
Protesting?
Because
God hates Vulcans.
Vulcans are the devil. They were supposed to be red originally. So they could have, you know, they really should have been picking that funeral in that itty-bitty torpedo room.
That's great.
But the email continues.
There's more? Better shut up.
I realize the last subject is a bit more trivial while we're on the subject of generations. I figured I'd share my opinion. Guy, you said that Data saying, oh shit, was out of place and that it stuck out like a sore thumb. It did stick out like a sore thumb, but I think that was the point. One of the major themes of the movie is Data's trying to deal with new emotions because he has no experience dealing with emotions. He reacts to every situation differently than the rest of the Enterprise crew. They have had their whole lives up to now to practice regulating their emotions, whereas Data has had a day. When Data says, oh shit, he wasn't trying to be funny or to make light of the situation. He was in a state of being genuinely horrified because he thought he was about to die.
It reminds me, actually, just to interrupt, is when I took my son on a roller coaster and he
said, oh shit.
He did say, oh shit. He was like, oh shit.
Holy.
And I was like, well, I understand.
So we're effectively saying that they took Data on a roller coaster.
They made him into a child.
Yes.
And he was kind of a child. Yeah, Mr. Tricorder. Oh my God. That was just.
Mr. Tricorder is actually pretty funny.
That hurts to watch that Mr. Tricorder scene.
I don't know why I find that hysterical, but I love that scene.
Oh, it hurts to watch it. I feel bad.
Though I totally agree. I think maybe the reason it bothers me, because he's right. I mean, he's only had emotions for a day, and you don't know how to process it. But it felt kind of like a, hey, guess what? We're making movies now. You know what that means? What? We could say bad words. Let's have Data say a bad word.
Yeah.
You know, that was more why it stuck out. Cause like his Mr. Tricorder and the life form song and all of that stuff, that all fit. That was all fine.
I actually liked the life form song. It's probably one of my highlights of Generations.
I love the life form song. I actually like Mr. Tricorder too. so I'm going to beg to differ with you, Dave. I like the Mr. Tricorder.
Oh, that's fine. It's not the Mr. Tricorder, but it's that whole scene where he's like starts to break down the faces that Data starts to make or borderline orgasm.
I just think that,
and it's very uncomfortable.
My issue with Generations is that, you know, I think they could have launched a much stronger franchise. Because First Contact was great. I enjoyed that.
It was great, but then they went right back downhill.
That's because I think, on some like level, like intellectual level in the future, like there was a more lighthearted atmosphere about
it,
and whatnot. Almost, it was almost reminiscent of the very first Star Trek movie, which a lot of people pan. Mm-hmm. I have friends that pan it. I actually liked that a lot because it wasn't as militaristic. The studios changed it to be more militarized, like by Wrath of Khan, which is a great film, mind you.
Right. Yeah.
But in the first movie, really, they weren't wearing military uniforms. It was kind of like outfits people would wear in the future.
Beachwear.
And it was really, there was a more scientific aspect to what they did.
Right.
I appreciated that.
It feels sort of more like the original series in that aspect. I'm not a big fan of it, but I do appreciate it as a movie because it literally is like a 70s effects film because that's 80% of the movie is just visual effects.
Well, I mean, I always, which is part of my problem.
The effects were outstanding.
Well, and that two things I always say about the motion picture is one, I always think they're kind of like making callbacks to 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is, you know, face it, before that we had these like awful, you know, special effects of the Enterprise. Now we have these full-blown, beautiful models of the refit Enterprise. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to do a 15-minute tracking shot of the Enterprise because people haven't seen the Enterprise in 15-some years. And
are you done yet?
But truth be told, those effects hold up.
Oh, I yeah, absolutely. They do.
They still hold
besides
up.
Besides them going into warp. That's about
well,
it.
Yeah, that'd be okay.
Well, you know, as long as they don't look at the view screen, they just look at Ilea when they're in the wormhole, those effects are fine.
That's all right. I can look at Ilea for a while.
Yeah. Oh, look. You know what?
She's not wearing her bra.
Sulu was pretty interested in Super Sex Alien, if you remember. Like, they all were kind of, hey.
Hey, she's only wearing a bathrobe, and she's got a weird pink button on her throat. I wonder what that's for.
Sulu goes, I'll find out.
Does that come out so I can?
Oh, my.
Right.
All right. There's still more.
Oh, man.
Let's see. So when Data said it was going to be funny, he's trying to be generally horrified because he thought he was going to die. So that's back up to where we were. Combine that with Data's general lack of verbal filter, and there you go. Also remember when Malcolm McDowell had his gun pointed at Data? He actually began to beg for his life. That scene takes me by surprise every time I watch it, because it's about the last thing you'd expect Data to do. Dealing with stressful situations definitely requires experience, unless you've been, you know, happen to be emotionless android. I know this theme is kind of long. I love listening to the show, but can be frustrating at times not being able to continue the conversation. So I was in the email mode, so I just kind of went bonkers. Joshua, sent from my iPad.
Wait, now, wait a second. Is he defending Generations?
Or is he just, no, I think he's just actually defending my argument against that particular thing, which actually I totally agree with him on that one. I mean,
this is why I was like, guy, he's directly addressing you in the second half of this.
I don't know. You think,
and I totally can't. I have to say that he's spot on about the behavior of Data didn't bother me at all. It's just that we don't get bad language in Star Trek by design.
Well, Bones said Data a lot.
That doesn't mean it.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't get a lot of the language that's not allowed on TV because it's a TV show. Which, you know, in the same way, I sort of had a little bit of a problem with the horseshit line from Beyond for much the same. Although that was clever and cute and put in, you know, in sort of a clever way. It still felt like the same thing, which was, hey, we're in a real movie now. We can say bad words. Let's just write this into the script.
Let's get Spock to say it, too.
Yeah, let's get Spock to say it, because everybody will laugh at that.
Yeah.
And to some degree, that my objection really isn't against Data at all. I mean, his characterization is totally right. And Joshua's defense of that is totally spot on. I mean, because I don't have any problem with that. It just felt like we don't have a lot of language in Star Trek by its nature because it's a television show. So it felt kind of like you're watching the lens of the future, where in the future they're speaking Snurgleblatt. They're not speaking English. We're just watching a translation of it, you know, sort of thing. And so there just aren't any bad words anymore. It's like Japanese doesn't really have that many bad words. Just by nature, you just speak rudely to one another, and that's the equivalent of bad words.
That's depressing.
Just don't understand like why we've got a stigma on bad words. I mean, words have a meaning; they're there for a thing. Yeah, and to categorize words as
it's a weird,
bad words,
and you
just,
know,
it just is like it's like that's there's bad breathing.
Can I just talk about that for just a second? And it has nothing to do with Star Trek, but as you know, parent, and I'm sure you know, you guys, my kids will have discovered swear words. And personally, I don't really give a hell. I mean, I really don't care, you know, but I don't want them saying in front of other parents.
Well, I'm
trying to avoid the pink slips from the school.
Right, that's that really kind of thing. But besides that, I couldn't care at all. It's a word.
But if we as a culture, like, stopped putting all this negative connotation on certain words, then no one would give a fuck.
Yeah.
Well, really? Like no
it's
one
not
would.
Just that, but I mean to pick that's not something I would if I was going to criticize that movie, I wouldn't worry or any of them about them using like
oh shit.
Vulgarity or something in it because honestly that's it doesn't really mean anything and it's cuz we're so tight-assed in this country with regard to language.
Right.
On television
and bodies.
Well, yeah, well, and everything. You know, like I would like to hope even in that far future like they'll still find farts hilarious and like nobody is going to do anything. They have to, right?
Especially but, Data. This would be the first thing Data ever laughs at.
My problem with the whole problem if we're talking about that movie, the emotion chip.
Yeah.
Data's not dumb. Mm-hmm. So maybe before you put a potentially unstable emotion chip in your head that you, let's be honest, pretty much pried that from his brother's head. Yeah. That was fused into his brother's head. So, and you just drop it in yours. Maybe you run it by the captain. Hey, I know we're on a mission. I was going to go stick emotions in my head. This can't possibly go wrong.
Hey, Captain, you know? I'm going to drop this LSD before we go on the mission. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
I got these mushrooms. These are going to be great.
I'm also going to make a daughter again. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Now that I have emotions, I can feel for
my
daughter.
Yeah, if you think
now.
About it, Data's a little bit of a loose cannon on the ship.
Well, you know, kind of going back to what Guy says with, you know, how it kind of sticks out because language is just because it's a movie and we can do that now because it's not on television. With Star Trek Beyond, I keep on calling the new series Beyond, Discovery, STD, that maybe since it's on a streaming service, maybe they will go back to swears? They're not going to be regulated by any regular TV censors.
Well, you know what? We've evolved altogether. Now, if we're gonna move outside of like science fiction, I don't know if any of you watched Hannibal.
Oh, I loved it.
Okay, I did too. I would watch that. I mean, for the first episode, I'm like, I cannot believe this is a network television.
Oh yeah,
what they got away with. So I think
it's as bloody as 80s rated R movies.
We're still totally behind, like socially, with regard to like Europe and like their television program,
right?
But that I think was really a step forward in like what we can do,
and also Brian Fuller.
Well, yeah, Brian Fuller too. I mean, to take that whole storyline and do his own thing with it, and even in the most ridiculous moments. But it was what they got away with on that show. I mean, to me, that signaled that things are changing.
Well, sure. And
I mean, really, honestly, if we're going to have a change, I'm hoping, and I know this sounds really horrible out of context, but I'm hoping we would start pushing the boundaries of nudity and nakedness. Cause like we're bringing back to Conspiracy, right? Conspiracy shows this guy's like spine and rib cage, right? I mean, and his head's gone. And eyeballs and gross and everything like that.
You can't show boobs.
But good heavens, had he taken off his clothes, that would have been the end of it.
You know,
nobody would have allowed that.
You know, I think we're going to look back on this like years later. And you know who pioneered nudity on television?
Game of Thrones?
Dennis Franz. And then what?
Oh, yeah.
How many times did you see his ass in that television?
Yeah, Robert Beltran
in NYPD Blue.
And it wasn't the ass you wanted to see.
No, you didn't want to see that.
No, but it was always
his. Well, to be honest, I mean, it's not a sexual thing. It's just that I feel like that particular aspect of our culture has always been so ridiculously pinned down.
Of course it has.
And it's just bizarre. And it's strange. Because you're right. I mean, totally.
Well,
there were more butts in NYPD Blue.
Well, we got Chakotay's butt.
Yeah, we did. We got Robert Beltran. He showed his ass on Voyager.
The other thing I was going to say was, you know, again, bringing back to the kids is like, you know, obviously I Netflix a lot of stuff. There's stuff I just don't play with when the kids are in the room, and it's just like, you know, you don't. Obviously, there's certain shows that you don't play with your children in the room, and any parent who would put on, you know, something like that would be, that would show naked bodies or sexual, you know, I mean, they're a bad parent. So, I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I think it's like, you should be able to self edit yourself.
Well, and it reminds me of those days when we were the early days of Japanese animation, when we had the convention and the moms would bring in their like 4 or 5 year olds. And, you know, because they thought it was Tom and Jerry. You know, they thought it was all cartoons.
It's tentacle.
And you'd get like Uratsuki Doji, which is, you know, tentacle porn. And they just they come out, you know, with their faces ghost white. And you're like, what were you thinking? And they're like, I thought it was Tom and Jerry. And I'm like, no, we put warnings everywhere about this. Well, I didn't read them. And so it becomes our fault.
Right. It's the same parents that complained when they took their children to like an Eddie Murphy stand up.
Yeah.
Thinking it was going to be said.
It was Dr. Doolittle. It was PG, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I guess it comes down to like people are just, there's a lot of stupid people out there. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, it's like, I mean,
you can't fix stupid.
I mean, I haven't.
Well, it's not just that. How do you make it so that we don't get punished for stupid people?
But I think the whole nature of everything, it's changing. And a lot of it has to do with the streaming services. Like when you have your Netflix and your Amazon, for the simple fact, they can do those shows. They can do whatever they want on them. They can be as vulgar and have all the nudity they want. So now, what do the networks do? That's competition.
Right.
You're losing entire television shows.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's why, you know, Star Trek Discovery is moving to CBS All Access, which is bullshit anyways, but we got to live in that world.
But hopefully, because it's on this, they'll push the limits of.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll watch it if they're going to push limits. If they're going to push the limits, I'll be there. That makes it worth it.
Ryan Fuller does push limits. So, I mean, we got Hannibal, all that blood, and he's doing American Gods, which is, like, I read there's going to be so many digital dicks in that, it's going to be ridiculous. And so,
I mean, these changes have been in place for a long time when you think of it. Like, Sopranos, like HBO, when they took on Sopranos, after every network rejected it. Mm-hmm. And that show would not be what it was if it was on the network.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right?
It had to be on
that. But then they realized, well, that's a multi-million-dollar property that was just lost.
Right.
You know, because we didn't want to do it.
And Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. And, HBO was really a pioneer in a lot of those, you know, in that area.
And they could be because they could get away with it.
Absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, we called it HBO After Dark.
Right.
When you see the movies like Hard Bodies and stuff.
Right. All the stupid soft porn stuff. Yeah. No, I agree.
Unsquiggled.
No, I mean, I agree. It's one of those things that are just it's inevitable, and it's great that we can actually not be censored into stuff.
Like on this podcast.
Exactly. What is that? That's one of the I could never say, like, you know. There was a lot of words I could never say when I did radio, and I'd have to, like, you have to censor yourself and really think several words ahead when you're talking.
Exactly.
And it's difficult.
Yeah, I agree. You know? It is difficult. And it's funny because even sometimes.
All I have to do is label this episode explicit. Boom.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about it. And it's a wonderful thing. And I do appreciate, actually, any podcast I listen to, I do appreciate when they're just. They're not swearing just to swear, but they're just swearing because it's part of their everyday vocabulary.
Right.
And I enjoy that. I enjoy that with anything, you know, as long as it's authentic. So.
Well, that makes a huge difference. I don't like the word, but vulgarity for the sake of it.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Or just like violence for the sake of violence and doesn't like enhance the story or really add
that's
to
stupid.
It, then
I hate
pointless.
That. Yeah, I hate that.
Too. Or nudity for the sake of nudity. Sure. I mean, it's all the same.
Yeah, exactly.
While appreciated.
Right.
Unless it's Dennis Franz's ass.
It's harder to appreciate
even
that.
Then I wasn't so sure I was out on that. But that's all right. You know, it's all good.
But thank you, Josh, for emailing us. We always love reading emails. And it's fun we had this such a big forum tonight to all answer your email, even though you were mostly directing it at me and Guy.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it didn't sound like a, you know, he gets on here and then we all jumped on him for it, you know, because really – he had a very valid point, and I completely agree.
It's almost unfair because he's writing this long email rebutting us, and we're all rebutting that and having our own points. But I mean, it's.
But I think
they read us another email.
But I think
we love email, so please email us at thehollicks@yahoo.com.
Yeah, I think the thing is that we're.
And it's a great discussion we've had that we bounced off of because of it.
Not just that, but I think that generations is a hot button. Period.
Generations is a hot button all the way across the board.
Yeah, no matter what.
It is because
there's a lot of stuff out of Generations.
But I, you know, even when I was, well, I forgot what year that came out.
90 something.
So I mean, I was still young, but I knew the moment they added Shatner on, I had a concern.
Yeah.
I just did because I was a fan of that.
Sure.
Next Generation.
Me too.
They could stand on its own, and the studio just didn't believe that.
It was like, I got to throw Shatner into it.
Like, I would have been fine if they would have kept making TOS movies and Next Gen movies. They could have gone side by side for another couple
of
years.
But I could get crucified for this, but I really think sometimes when writers or producers allow fans to have too much influence, that can create a problem with it.
That's a good point.
With a story.
Sure.
Because you could just mire
well,
into
exactly.
things.
Well, exactly. And it just lets – I mean, look what happened when, like, kind of Lucas opened the doors and let everyone just write these novels, you know, for Star Wars. And, like, every idiot in the cantina had a backstory.
Yeah.
Like, the wolf man in the cantina, one story became, like, a pilot and was fighting against the Death Star. Like, what?
Well, like,
no, but, he was just a jerk in a bar.
he was an alcoholic.
You know, fan hate and entitlement, which I know Guy does a separate podcast called Geek Tank. They did an episode recently about entitlement. But entitlement ruined possibly the prequel trilogy that George Lucas did, because there's a theory that came out before episode 7 came out, that Jar Jar was like the Sith. And there's like an hour-long video online about it. It's super in-depth. And there's a lot of stuff that he's like, you know, George Lucas rips off a lot of other science fiction actors. I mean, writers.
Well, yeah.
And like all these things like make sense that Jar Jar could have been this big thing. But there's so much hate about Jar Jar that he basically got written out of the next two movies. And he could have been like this big bad.
Well,
I have to admit,
that would have really been interesting and a twist and totally different.
It would have been great. But I think fan entitlement and fan backlash... I mean, we don't know where it was going
to
happen.
To a degree, I think what you had with, I mean, what made, I think, the original trilogy, if now if we're switching from Star Trek to Star Wars, what made the original trilogy work is that Lucas did the first film, and he let other writers come in and other directors come in to do the other, you know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Right? George Lucas does his best work whenever he's not directly involved.
Best idea.
He's actually a very good storyteller. Like, he had so much influence over those Clone War cartoons and what happened. There were some great stories.
Yeah, the cartoons were good.
Some great stories. He had a lot of influence in that. What his problem is, he doesn't direct actors because he's so enamored with the backgrounds and the special effects. And he had he's at a level where there's no one standing over his shoulder saying, yeah, that's kind of dumb.
Well, right. Well,
you shouldn't be doing that.
You know,
it's Paul McCartney releasing his newest album. No one's ever going to tell Paul McCartney that's a shitty song.
You know.
Simply.
I mean, you can come up with a
wonderful
good
Christmas time. That's a terrible song, Mr. McCartney. Please don't record it.
But that's it. I mean, I think I don't like all this backlash against Lucas. I think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves as like kind of the storyteller.
I do think he is talented. But
I think he's a good storyteller, like in a broad strokes kind of way. But he can't put pen to paper.
But to
convincingly,
you're right about that. But my point is, like, for them to just, even the studios, to completely abandon him to have any influence or input in what might work and might not work. There's value there. Doesn't mean you have to use every idea. You certainly don't. But I think, you know.
Well, let's face it. Let's go back to Star Trek. Roddenberry. Roddenberry had a beautiful vision.
Also good at
and he literally crippled Next Generation until he was out of the scene.
He crippled it in a part of those conventions, which, you know, he felt that just like you said, the dynasty holding on to this kind of cherished thing, and he didn't want to lose that, you know. And it's like, you know, but at the same time, he was holding on to this. Meanwhile, like, all the women had to wear short skirts for some reason.
Right, yeah.
You know, it... So, yeah, the story, they really did character development after he was done with the show.
And, I mean, believe me, I'm not knocking Roddenberry for anything. I'm just saying that he had a vision, and it just was not going to be compelling storytelling for some. I mean, what was one of the rules is that nobody could have any beef with anybody else on this Enterprise. Like, they couldn't actually fight in between.
They all had to get along and everything. All conflict had to come from outside the ship.
Yeah, I mean, okay, fine. But, I mean, if you look at the original series, you know, Bones and Spock fought constantly. You know, when in Tholian Web, when Kirk is technically lost, you know, they're fighting constantly until they get the message from Kirk to tell them to, you know, work with each other. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you take human nature out of it. You can't really take human nature out of the equation. That's still going to exist in the future.
That we're going to not always everybody. Yeah, exactly.
The idea
or Vulcan nature is the case.
The idea is that it should be the concept of a future that's based in exploration. You know, and I think the movies changed that a bit because as a friend and I had discussed is that I do question a future where the best job's the military.
Yeah.
Right. I would have some questions about that, even though there's a scientific
exploration. Well, I mean, we don't really know. We don't know anyone's job outside the military except for groundskeeper Boothby.
And there's some scientists out there hanging out.
It's more building underwater things.
Building underwater things, building, you know, clones that can age everyone rapidly.
No, I do agree with you on that point.
New Orleans.
One of the things with I think the movies altered it, and I do enjoy the movies, but it was – they made it so militaristic, and we lost the idea of the fascination of discovery and exploration. I mean, we got a little bit back in Next Generation, but then we went kind of back into the Borg and going to the warfare and all the things. And okay, those are beautiful stories. They're compelling. They're interesting. But we kind of lost a lot of
that. Well, because that sells.
Of course, you know, it does.
Just like the modernization of Battlestar Galactica. That was a great show. I really enjoyed the show.
I loved it.
But except it wasn't Battlestar Galactica.
Thank you.
Because the original was it. I mean, they were evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one episode where Adama showed he had telekinesis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not kidding.
I know. So, I remember. Yeah.
And I think I was
a big fan of the show as a kid.
And you look just like with the original Star Trek series and the original, there was a different level of writing because they let real science fiction writers do scripts and they could be abstract and strange and still be really enjoyable.
Yeah, and it's one of the things I think we lose constantly because we always think that we got to blow everything up all the time. And yeah, okay, I agree. It is fun sometimes, but you don't have to do it for everything. Like you said, the motion picture was, I mean, yeah, they were part of Starfleet, but you didn't. They weren't really blowing things up necessarily. Yeah, no. There was more of Discovery and trying to figure out what's going on. And
well, that's one of the things that scares me about Discovery. It being a short 13 episode strong arc, we're not going to probably ever see any, you know, Cities on the Edge of Forever or anything like that ever again, because there's no time to do weird one offs when you're trying to. When you only have 13 episodes and you're trying to tell a cohesive story.
Well, a lot of those one-offs tend to come, like, sometimes, especially, that was the worst part of, like, Battlestar Galactica as it went on, the newer series. The writers never expected
The first two seasons were so solid.
Because they never expected it to be a hit. And they wrote themselves into a corner.
And then seasons 3 and 4,
yeah,
they went Star Trek-y. I mean that in the way that... They lost the story arc.
Anytime you have this story arc where you have entire episodes where absolutely nothing happens until the last 5 minutes, that insults my intelligence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And like with all these things, like I know people get cold when sometimes you say, oh, the fan influence or something like that. I'm an absolute fan. I Star Trek, the original series, Next Generation, was one of my all-time favorite shows. I will still watch it if it's on television. But you have to approach it honestly and say, yeah, you know, just because I'm a fan doesn't mean I can't criticize.
Sure,
you know, sure, and that's what we're all about. We pick things apart, but we do it with love, and you know, we even on our worst of episode, my mandate was we have to try to find a way to fix it, like because we love Star Trek. We failed miserably because some episodes you just can't fix because they're so bad. But I mean, like
there are some. You can't
there, fix. I think we tried to do it in, with as much love as possible.
Yeah. It's I guess what it comes down to is that there's a lot of the fandom is obviously pretty rabid. It's pretty nuts, as we've seen, especially in the Star Trek community, which is good and bad at the same time. But the other part of it in the end is that when you try to cater to the fans, I think you lose something because you're always going to lowest common denominator. And I'm sorry, I'm going to say something that's going to piss some people, listeners off, but I think the remakes of some of the Star Treks, you know, from like Into Darkness and the reboots, I think they lost something there. I'm not saying they're terrible movies, but they're just,
I'll be glad to say they're terrible. And let me tell you, I liked
we're going to get hate mail.
No, like, that's fine. I liked the redesign of the Enterprise, but the stories were not there. Into Darkness,
I have a lot of problems with, but
I was progressively more angry as I watched that movie because it was so dumb.
Well, the beginning of the movie had a lot of good points, and then it started really falling apart for me. I liked the reboot. I thought, okay, this is interesting. This is a different take. Obviously, we're kind of modernizing it a little bit so people can get into it that have never watched it before. But and beyond, I still enjoyed it. I think there are some things that did fall down, but Beyond's probably actually when you think about
Beyond
it,
was fantastic.
It was probably closer.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's probably closer to the original Star Trek vision.
To me, it's the most Star Trek-y movie since Star Trek VI.
Yes.
Easily.
Yes.
Well, maybe they learned a lesson, and I can't speak to that one, but Into Darkness left such a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, Into Darkness is directed by J.J. Abrams, and J.J. Abrams loves this stupid freaking mystery box. And making a mystery box con was the worst idea ever. Because, I mean, if you're not a fan of the show, I am Khan means absolutely nothing to you. And if you are, you figured out it was Khan from the previews.
Yeah.
Or you were offended because they had been saying the entire time, no, it's not
it's John Harrison.
Because then you're like, well, okay, so you lied to us.
But what's aggravating is you have some talented actors doing those movies, and Benjamin Cumberbatch is an incredible actor. You could have taken that a lot of ways, and it just felt unfinished, and it wasn't Star Trek.
Sure. There's parts I liked and there's parts I disliked, obviously. I don't want to go over that again. But
we've got a whole episode on Star Trek in the Darkness.
Yeah. Woo! But I mean, it does come down to is that I think we were kind of shooting at the lowest common denominator of just what do fans want to see.
But okay. That's studios doing that.
Of course
it is. I mean, and even when you get back to, I was going to say before with regard to the fans and that power they seem to wield is there was a point in time where Jonathan Frakes made some offhanded comment about the fans being mm-hmm. kind of over the top.
Yeah.
And Paramount made him go on to like a talk show and apologize. Right. I mean, that should not be necessary.
Yeah. I think we all know that.
Yeah. Lots of stupid things happen.
I think you know if you're doing a podcast on Star Trek that you're a little over the top.
we
pride ourselves on being not over the top.
I mean, you can have fun and you don't take this, you know, you take it seriously, but not you enjoy yourselves.
Don't. Yeah,
and I think still one of my all-time favorite documentaries was Trekkies.
Yeah,
the first
right.
one. And
right.
Trekkies 2 was actually pretty good, too.
No, it's just...
Warp 11 that lets us use their music was in Trekkies 2.
Yeah. I don't know. So I guess it comes down to is that fans, it's like anything. It's like we have a representative government because there's a lot of basically redneck yahoos that would just do crazy things if they Yahoo. Had their choice to. So be careful. But
so much caution.
But you know what I mean is that that's the reason we have a representative government, because a true democracy we'd see some crazy stuff happen.
Yeah,
I just hope as they move forward with the franchise, which I mean, let's face it, petered out. Yeah. I mean, that's what happened, and I think it's because they need to take some risks.
Yeah,
and hopefully they will.
Let writers come on and do really good character-driven stories and put some good arcs in there, you know, and I think you'll get a great product out of it.
I agree, and I hope that happens too, and I hope Discovery has the same poignant subtext as a lot of the other episodes that were so important in the past that, you know, it's reflecting something in our culture now that we can go like, oh, I'm an asshole. kind of thing. So
we can hope so. But Chris, thank you so much for coming on and joining us tonight and talking about Omnius and all the other projects that you're currently working on. Where can people find you and your stuff on social media?
Well, if for Omnius Press, you can just simply Omnius Press on Facebook and on Twitter, just like it's Sleeping Giant Collectibles as well. And as the Film Fest is Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival, that you can Google us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and, of course, the interwebs.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, you can find us online at Synthaholics.com. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at Warp11.com or Warp11 on Twitter. You can follow us at Synthaholic Duo. I'm at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
I'm at USS Tamerlan or G.S. Davis Art, or soon, Witches of Flame.
Witches of Flame looks cool.
And Faith is at Faith Hertzberg.
She's not here.
She's not here. She's having internet issues, which we were scared we're going to have tonight with the storms.
The storms seemed to blow over, so.
It did.
Yeah. But yeah, and what were we going to say? We said before, if you're going to write us, you can write us at Synthaholics.
At yahoo.com.
Yeah.
If you want to throw some money our way, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics. If you want to support the show, if you want to support Guy's art, he also has a Patreon, patreon.com/GS Davis Art.
Support the arts.
Support the arts.
Yes. And support the arts.
And if you don't want to give us money, please go on iTunes, write reviews. Give us stars.
Lots of stars.
Give us lots of Star Treks. And, you know, this will help us get seen in the charts so more people will download the show and enjoy what you guys have been enjoying for almost a year and a half now.
And you can also tell a friend.
Tell a friend. You know, go to your neighbor, wear a white shirt, ride a bicycle, knock on their door.
Telephone. Television.
Yeah.
All those things.
You can find us in all those places. Tell your friends.
Set a car on fire.
You could start a car on fire. Bryce sent the holics on it. Somehow we have the police knocking on our door.
Leave it in the middle of your downtown.
Your neighbor's car. You know the one.
That's ominous for you.
It's scary here.
It's a dark and stormy night. Yes. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper. Over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Cool.
That's almost 2 hours of gold.
Oh my god. Those poor people.
They're gonna be like,
well, I was having interesting dropouts during this. It would like go for a while. It was almost like it was trying to save or something because it would drop out. That's why you were like, Guy, where are you? Because it had dropped out right then. Really? And I'm like, I know I'm supposed to say something right here, but...